it's midnight because they had seen movement in the office and lights in there when there shouldn't have been. And then I had the opportunity to work for this startup pharmaceuticals company, and that was kind of my MBA, because that was my plan, was to go back and do my master's degree in business administration with a joint degree in law, and I was studying to go back to do that when I had this, I guess, real-life MBA thrown at me. Mm-hmm. So that was... That's awesome. Kind of started my business career.
Yeah. So what advice would you give to young students like heading into university or getting ready to start thinking about that?
I would say first and foremost, not to stress out too much about it. Mm. I know at the time I was so stressed out about picking a major and trying to figure out what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And years later, I would joke, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I think the university experience should really be about learning how to think critically and enjoying the experience of being out there learning from profs and fellow students and being connected to somebody within your respective programs. And my brother went to Commerce, and he still has connections with the folks that he went to school with. Mm-hmm. And I, because I was so shy, I kind of went through my university years on my own and didn't really connect with anyone. I have no network left from university whatsoever, and mm-hmm. that's one of my regrets. So I would say, if you're going to university, to enjoy that experience, don't stress out too much. And you can always go back and take something that you feel like you missed. There's just so many opportunities now that, even if you've picked something, that's a good stepping stone. Mm-hmm. And you should never just limit yourself to what you've already learned and say, well, that's it. I've got my undergrad in that, and therefore I can't do anything else.
Yeah.
I'm a perfect example. I have a psychology degree, and here I am, as owner and CEO of a technology company. Like, how did that happen? So, I think the path to success is never a linear straight line. Mm-hmm.
So for those of us who don't have photographic memories, do you feel like this was a requirement for your success, or do you just feel it was a tool that you had at your disposal?
Oh, gosh, it was absolutely a tool. And back then, when I went to university, it was a long time ago. And I think education back then was more about memory and rote mm-hmm. memory and just getting as much information into your head and spewing it back out on exam papers. I think education's changed a lot over the years. Now it's more about applying your knowledge, mm-hmm. right? Google's here. Back then there was no Google. We had to go and study and go to the basement of the library and go into the stats to read all these encyclopedias and books. Now all the information's at our fingertips. Why would we have to memorize any of that information? That's useless.
Mm-hmm.
You can look up anything at any time that you want. So it's really about creativity and thinking and how do you apply the knowledge and come up with new ideas. And, I think that's really what education has now become and should be.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's great. What is your favorite thing about the field you work in?
Well, technology as a whole, I think, is because it's so fast-paced and always changing that there are no 2 days that are ever the same. It keeps it exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is definitely the best thing.
Nice.
Yeah. In the domain industry, I think over the years there have been some bad players in our industry. And for me, it was an opportunity to kind of do things right and rather than look at domain registration and hosting and so forth as just a commodity or just a number in terms of customers and volume. It was the opportunity to do something right, that these are real people with real businesses. They are doing their respective things in terms of building their ideas and being able to accommodate them and help them facilitate mm-hmm. what they're doing is such a great thing. And for us, our core values have always been about customer service. Mm-hmm. You look outside our office, we've got our core values and giant red letters on our walls. The first one is to amaze every customer with exceptional service. Our number two core value is to always be improving. And number three is to make a positive difference. And we've really incorporated that into everything that we do, all the decisions that we make. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm really proud of. And I think that's something that we're adding to the industry.
That's amazing. It's so important to have a core set of values to really guide you to making the right decisions, not just for your company, but also for other people in the world.
Absolutely. And having those core values actually make it so much easier to make decisions, because the decisions you make should just be based on what those core values are.
Yeah. So do you have any specific examples of how you guys are making that positive difference in the world here?
Yeah. So We serve on a lot of different boards, and so I think in terms of making a positive difference, as a team, we do different things like participating in charities, for example. So years ago, as my father was battling cancer, and he battled cancer for 14 years, one of the things that I recognized was that early detection is just so important. Mm-hmm. 90% of cancers can be cured when they're found in their early stages, stage mm-hmm. one or earlier. Yet the majority of the funding and the research goes towards trying to cure stage four and late stage cancers. Mm-hmm. So we got involved with an organization called the Canary Foundation. So Canary in the coal mines.
Yes.
And it was all about early detection of cancer using mm-hmm. different types of technologies. So we got together with the technology community in BC, both in Vancouver and Victoria. And I ended up being co-chair and then eventually chair of the organization, Vancouver Canary Derby. And we were building and racing soapbox cars to raise money for early cancer detection. So super fun event. We used to do this in Gastown. We would build ramps, and we had massive amounts of people along Water Street racing soapbox cars. And there's some videos on YouTube if anybody's interested. And then we ended up doing it at Deer Lake in mm-hmm. Burnaby because it had a natural hill.
Nice.
So there were a few crashes here and there, but ultimately we raised a lot of money, both in Vancouver and Victoria, about $800,000 wow. over a few years. And we were funding research at the BC Cancer Agency.
Amazing.
More recently, we've started with the Canadian Cancer Society to start the Web Names Cancer Prevention Fund. And we're helping to raise money for building the Cancer Prevention Center in Vancouver.
Wow.
So that is coming up.
That's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do with your, and I say this very ironically, spare time?
Yeah, so besides the company and the boards and the kids and the charity work, there's not a lot of spare time. So when there is spare time, it's really walking around the seawall and spending a bit of time on our deck, which is close to Stanley Park, and just watching the birds fly by and, basically decompressing mm-hmm. whenever possible.
Nice. That's awesome. So if you are ready, we are going to head into our lightning round questions. These are quick questions, short and sweet.
All right.
Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Me too. what is your favorite word?
favorite word? Grit.
Nice. Mm-hmm. If you weren't running webnames.ca, where do you think you'd be?
Wow. It's been 17 years. Jeez. Well, doing some kind of business, because Webnames isn't my first company, so I would say it would be another company. I think running a business isn't necessarily what that gadget is or what that product or service. It's about the people around you and building an awesome team.
If you could have any superpower, what would it be?
That's interesting. Super intelligence.
Nice. Big brain.
Big brain, and then that way you can figure anything out, and super intelligence could then help you figure out how to fly, how to become invisible, so all the other superpowers that people
just
normally want.
Intellect them.
Yeah, you can figure it all out. So that's the basis for all other superpowers.
Nice. So what is your favorite book?
My favorite book, the one that I'm reading, the one that I finished reading recently, is called The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. Really interesting book about running a technology startup, growing it into this massive company, and all the challenges that he went through in getting that accomplished. And then one that I've always enjoyed and recommend to people is Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oldie but a goodie.
Yeah.
Okay, to wrap it up, if you had to choose one food to eat for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Sushi.
Love sushi. Right there with you. Delicious.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so to actually wrap things up at the end of this wonderful interview, what advice do you have for young people out there?
Well, I would say, first of all, to keep your mind open to opportunities. Secondly, when going to university, learn to think critically and think about where the future is going to be. Do a lot of reading and think about where, you know, AI machines can take over. All the routine work that humans are currently doing, even some of the complex work that humans are currently doing, where will we add value? Some of the jobs that we know today will no longer exist when my kids are out of university. And I always ask them to think about learning about thinking critically and being creative and adding value to the world. And then finally, because it's such a topic I'm so passionate about, women in technology, in STEM fields, it's going to take a while for that to change. And one of the studies that I really took note of when I'm on the Chair's Council of Science World, and one of the studies that Dr. Andrew Barron did there was looking at the number of boys and girls that are going to Science World, where parents are the ones in control, and looking at kids that are very young, from I think it was the age 0 to 5, there are way more boys being taken to Science World than there are girls. So it starts so early.
Yes.
As parents, we have a responsibility to socialize our children, boys and girls, in equal ways so that we're not pigeonholing them into fields that they should or shouldn't be in. So people always talk about starting early, having you know, women in technology types of organizations, supporting women in university or high school. I think it goes way earlier than that.
Definitely.
It has to be in primary school. It has to be even earlier as parents, where we're treating kids, taking young girls to coding camps and robotics camps and things like that, socializing them to these areas where many will have wonderful ideas that can change the world one day.
Mm. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Sabo, for joining me today. Where can people connect with you online?
Well, our website is webnames.ca, and people can connect with me directly through cybele.tel. It's cybele.tel, and it has all of my social media links.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to keep up with all the latest news on women in STEM, you can visit us online at wwest.ca. There, you can subscribe to our bi-weekly newsletter, connect with us on social media, and more. From everyone at West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology, thanks for listening.
Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. As a linguistics researcher, Ian Chu of South Korea is often asked to travel for research and conferences. But when he learned that taking one flight could cause more carbon pollution than the average citizen of Uganda emits in a year, he was appalled.
That was a big shock for me.
He decided to reduce his air travel. While he was a visiting researcher in the Netherlands, he attended 4 conferences.
For all of those conferences, I took the train.
But he says sometimes flying is the only option, and travel is critical for his research. For example, when he must go where a specific language is spoken. In those situations, he looks for a direct flight. Dan Rutherford of the International Council on Clean Transportation says direct flights tend to emit less carbon pollution, and not only because they often go a shorter distance.
Aircraft tend to burn a disproportionate amount of fuel and therefore emit more CO2 during the landing and takeoff phase of flight.
So Chu says even if he has to pay more to fly direct, it's important to him to make that choice.
So it's like lessening the guilt that is produced by flying this often compared to the average person on Earth.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.